Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have a very special guest today from Clipper Blog, from Pro Basketball Talk. You're everywhere now, DJ Foster.
I love the internet. It's the best place ever.
And so you're here to spread the gospel of Eric Bledsoe.
Yes, yes. I'm definitely the head of the gospel. Although Charlie Widow's fellow Clipper Blog writer will challenge me for it, I'm going to say I'm the head of it.
I feel like you guys have really started a cult here, because everywhere I look on Twitter, every time the Clippers are playing, it's Eric Bledsoe's so great, he does so many things, he does things beyond the box score, he should have his own team, he should have his own sitcom, he should have his own album. Like, everybody wants Eric Bledsoe everything right now.
He's incredible, and last night he played 11 minutes, and I think that's what it is. It's just because we see so little of him. He scored 10 points in 11 minutes. He had a couple and ones, like, and this was on a night that Jamal Crawford was like 5 for 19 or whatever he was. I mean, it's just insane how little we get to see him. So it's like, it's almost seeing like a rare animal in nature. Where you're just like, oh, it's so majestic whenever he gets to play. He's incredible. He's just such an amazing athlete, and all of that packed into a little 6'1" frame. To see the things that he's the best guard shot blocker. He's going to take that torch from Dwayne Wade soon, I think, as the best, you know, 6 foot, under 6'4" shot blocker in the league.
He kind of shoved that torch right in Dwayne's face earlier in the season. he did, with that incredible block.
He literally just took it from him, yeah.
I guess my question about the Clippers to you regarding Eric Bledsoe is they are kind of log jammed at guard, and I'm not even counting Willie Green as a guard or an NBA player, really. What would your ideal rotation be with this Clippers backcourt?
I mean, I would love to see Bledsoe used in a similar way, you know, kind of how James Harden was used a little bit. Like, you can start Chauncey Billups, play him for 6 minutes in like a Thabo Sefolosha type role, and then pull him out, put Bledsoe in there as the two guard, leave him in, and then when Chris Paul needs his break after playing the full quarter, shift him over to point guard. I mean, there's just so many easy ways. I know there's a lot of players in the backcourt and a lot of mouths to feed, but the hesitancy to play him both next to Chris Paul and off the ball, just because, yeah, he's not the greatest spot-up shooter in the world, or, yeah, he's not 6'6" and has ideal size, like, I don't think that matters anymore. Like, look what Boston was doing with Avery Bradley. Like, look what the Knicks were doing with Mon Shumpert. Like, you can get away with just having a really smart defensive fiend on the court next, you know, regardless of size, I think.
So the return of Chauncey Billups, I don't really understand what he's supposed to do in 2012. I mean, he's not necessarily a bad player, but It feels like they've put together a fantasy team in the sense that they just went for a name, and now they're standing by that name. Am I wrong about the current state of Chauncey Billups? Is there a purpose beyond his wonderful, beautiful name?
You know, I don't even think it was name so much as it just wanting to please Chris Paul.
Okay.
And Paul gave him so much lip service, like, during the year, that this is the best guy I've ever played next to. Like, he's an incredible mentor, like, all these different things. And so it's more like, Chris, like, you can have whoever you want. Like, build the roster. Like, just stay with us, please. So I think that's why Chauncey is sticking around. And maybe he'll transition to be the first player coach since... Who's the last player coach in the league, Zach? You know things.
Oh, God.
Was it Bill Russell? I remember.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it was Bill Russell. I mean, maybe... God, maybe Don Nelson was out there throwing some bows when we weren't expecting it with, like, the Bucks in the 80s. It wouldn't shock me if he snuck into a lineup or two.
Don Nelson was playing himself at center?
I feel like he would do that. He'd play himself at point guard.
He would definitely do that.
So, are you worried about Chris Paul leaving? I mean, it seems like, I mean, the biggest elephant in the room is just the existence of Donald Sterling, and that he seems to make money while screwing things up.
Right.
And he does have a certain reputation for things he's done, and this is something that players are definitely aware of. And so everything else around the organization seems to be going in the right direction. They've got great young players. They've got veterans in there. It's an environment that Chris Paul should love.
Yeah.
Why is Sterling enough for him to leave?
Sterling, I think, is almost like out of the picture now, which I know sounds silly from a Clippers fan because he can, you know, rear his ugly head at any time and just completely ruin things. But I don't even think the focus is so much on Sterling as they've given Chris Paul everything that he wants, like total control, roster decisions. You can bring in your friend Willie Green, even though the Clippers didn't need him. Like, they've given him everything. And I think here's the big thing is that they've kind of given him an out to where if you give him total, complete control and the Clippers go out in the first round or the second round or whatever it is in the playoffs, then Chris says, I can't do it here, right? Like, right. I did everything I possibly could. But they've given him an out by leaving Vinny Del Negro as head coach. So if the Clippers get waxed in the playoffs by the Spurs again, Chris Paul this offseason could say, I think we need a better tactician. Let's stay on. We'll hire whatever coach I want, whoever it is. If it's Byron Scott that he wants, or who knows what Chris Paul wants from a coach. I mean, he can get that guy. So I think he's gotten total control, but there's an out for him too, to where he doesn't have to take the blame if things go wrong. I mean, what else do you want as a superstar, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's got the market. He's got the roster he wants, it seems. He's got really everything he wants except for a title contender, and it does seem like they're building towards that. Do you think that they are a title-contending team as currently constructed?
Oh, that's, you know, I've wrestled with it so much, and honestly, I think they are, and last night kind of opened my eyes a little bit just because the Clippers were terrible last night, and Utah was getting whatever they wanted. They're playing awful defense. It was just everything that's wrong with the Clippers. And then Chris Paul, with 6 minutes left, scores 8 points, 2 assists, and the Clippers come back and win. So it's just, like, Paul is so good that it almost doesn't matter how bad they are. And, yeah, they're going to run into some really good teams like Oklahoma City, but I think they can, you know, I'm not that scared of Scottie Brooks out-coaching Vinny Del Negro towards the end of games. Like, I think Brooks has kind of a bad rap, but a lot of it's justified, so I'm not really worried about that. I'll take Chris Paul down the stretch and put him up against anybody. I am still frightened to death of the Spurs.
Yeah,
for good reason. It to the point where I would almost rather see the Clippers play the Thunder or, you know, the Lakers if they ever get it together than the Spurs. But I think they're a title contender. I mean, things could easily fall their way, in my opinion.
You brought up the 8 points from Chris Paul last night, and I need to live vicariously through you for a little bit. I've watched nearly every game of his career. I've had League Pass for a long time, and he's just been one of those guys that you just gravitate towards because he's so awesome.
Right.
So I've experienced him on the basketball court quite a bit, but I've never had the joy of rooting for the team he plays for. What is that like to know that one of the best players in the league, who is also the best at his position, who is one of the most entertaining point guards we've ever seen. Like, what is it like to root for him?
It's like being wrapped in a warm blanket and being cuddled. it's like the sweetest thing you can imagine, just because if the Clippers have a lead, like, you know, he's not going to give it away. Like, we have Chris Paul. He's not going to blow this. And if they're down, we have Chris Paul. Like, he can get us back into this. Like, down 26 in Memphis? No problem. We're fine. We're going to come back this. It's just, there's a certain level of comfort that, you know, obviously I've never experienced as a follower of the Clippers.
Really? Jeff McGinnis didn't give you that same?
You know, I didn't get that comfort from Jeff McGinnis. Not quite. Maybe Eric Piakowski.
Oh, sure.
He warmed my soul. No, it's just, and you don't really appreciate it until you watch him every night.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's one of those guys that just, I compared him to, he's like the Phil Jackson of point guards, kind of.
Yeah, that's a really good call.
He'll let his team go through, like, bad runs, and they'll be on an 8-0 run in the second quarter, and, like, he refuses to bail them out. He's like, I can score. Like, I can take, you know, against the Timberwolves, I saw it was a pretty good example. Like,
yeah.
I can take Luke Ridenour off the dribble every single time. Right? Like, I can destroy him in isolation, and we can get back into this game, but he doesn't do it. Like, he lets his teammates figure it out, and he wants Blake Griffin to get lots of touches early in the game. And then when it becomes time, when the Clippers really, really do need him, like, they sort of break the glass, and here's Chris Paul to save the day. Like, it's just incredible, his control over the game. Like, it can't be overstated how smart. I think he's the smartest basketball player I've ever watched, don't you? Like,
yeah, I mean, if not, he's definitely in the conversation.
He's right up there. Yeah, for sure.
That was one thing about that Timberwolves Clippers game the other night was the T-Wolves were battling, and it was very close towards the end, and I started to think, like, you know what? I think they've got a real chance to steal this game like they did last year. Like, this is kind of lining up the same way. And then Chris Paul, I think, scored two straight times against Luke Ridenour, and immediately I was like, oh, right. Like, he can do that whenever he wants, and they have literally nobody to stop him. This is over.
Right, and it's that star power. Like, a hero ball, we obviously... Us bloggers obviously kill it quite often, but there really is a value in just being able to give the ball to somebody and being like, go get us a bucket. You know, like, we don't have to do anything fancy. We'll set you a high screen and go do your thing. And, like, watching poor Al Jefferson last night try and hedge and, like, you know, show on screens against Chris Paul at the top of the key and just getting, you know, turned around like he was on a washing machine. It was like a little sad. Like, I felt, like, bad for him. Like, that's just kind of the way, like, Chris Paul can make you look. But I, you know what? To turn it around for you, I really enjoy watching the Timberwolves.
I don't need you to try to make me feel better. No. You can relish in the destruction that is Chris Paul.
I don't want to come across as a bragger or anything. Chris Paul all the time. Like, Andre Kirilenko is so fun. Like, I just love watching that guy cut off the ball. Like, anytime he's around the baseline, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be good.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to make something awesome happen. Like, I love the Timberwolves.
It's weird that, I mean, even after Blake Griffin had his rookie year, I was still happier to be a Timberwolves fan than if you asked me to be a Clippers fan, because I was like, no, I like Kevin Love. I like our guy. And then Rubio was going to come over, and it's like, all right, I've been looking forward to this for a while. This is going to be really good. And then... the Clippers trade for Chris Paul. It's like, oh, well, that's not fair. Now I do envy Clippers fans.
And it's such a weird spot to be in as a Clippers fan. To, like,
do you feel like you're held hostage in some sense because we don't know if Chris Paul's gonna leave? Or are you able to just sit back and kind of accept the present and really enjoy it?
I think you can accept the present.
Okay.
Because it's just, after so many years of looking to the future and, like, scouting the lottery and, like, watching college basketball in November and, like, wondering who you're gonna get. Like, I think Clippers fans have learned to appreciate, like, what they have. they you know, they're tired of looking for the future. Like, it's so funny, like, all the commenters on Clipper blog, like, they get so upset if you put any holes in their shots at a championship. Like, I guess it's like any, you know, like any blog, but if you point out anything negative, they're just like, no, this team is great. Like, we can win a title. Like, it's finally here for them.
That's, you know? That must be nice.
I think they're enjoying it.
I kind of felt that way in 2003, 2004, and it was clearly just a bad dream.
But you had Sam Cassell.
Yeah, that's true. Sam was a lot of fun. You guys had Sam Cassell. You guys had that awful, awful trade that took a first-round pick from the Timberwolves.
The Cassell Marco trade.
Oh, my God.
That just got cashed in. How incredible is that?
That was a long time. That was 7 years.
That was ridiculous. And the best part is, it was used on Austin Rivers.
That made me feel better about it.
That's who the pick is. It's like, gosh, I wouldn't take Austin Rivers on, like, my D-League team. Is that too much?
I mean,
you can't possibly like Austin Rivers.
Right? I feel like I want to like him just because everyone doesn't. And maybe it's too harsh. Like, coming out of high school, people thought this guy's a number one pick.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? And, like, look what he does to high school players. And I'm like, well, he's going against high school players. Like, I know that they're his peers, but these guys are beyond their peers. That's why they're who they are. And then he struggled at Duke, aside from a couple of moments, and then everyone hated him. And I'm like, well, maybe he's not as bad. I mean, I feel like I'm stuck in this limbo of Austin Rivers that I can't get out of.
Just come to the dark side. Just watch Brian Roberts and be like, yeah, that's the idea of Austin Rivers, just an irresponsible human being.
Right.
You know?
The idea... How about this for a segue? The idea of Blake Griffin...
Nailed it.
Is awesome. And the reality of him is kind of awesome. But people... I think people have this unreal expectation of what he needs to be so early in his career. And yeah, he's 4 years in now, but is it, I mean, he's still really young. Should people be that demanding of him? Is the fact that he's marketed so much and he is one of the faces of the NBA why there's so much demanded of him on the court?
Yeah, I think it's just a narrative that isn't necessarily supported by fact. Like everyone,
it seems unnecessary.
Yeah. I think it's just, I don't know what it is. I think it's his on-court, you know, persona of whatever, the flopping and, you know, the staring at the ref. And he's not particularly a likable player on the court, but the narrative that, like, he needs to be a jumper to be a successful power forward, it's like, well, he's shooting 44% from outside of 15 feet. This year.
Yeah.
It's like, his jumper is coming along just fine, people. Like, he's in his third played season. Like,
right.
What's the big hurry? Like, some guys don't get jumpers until, you know, they're 36 years old. Like, Jason Kidd didn't have a jumper until he was, like, literally, like, 37 years old, whatever right. he is. And, like, his career was just fine. Like, he's a Hall of Fame point guard. Like, and guess what? Blake is, like, the jumper is there. Like, it's coming along. I think the main criticism I have for him is that he's not a good defender.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of good young defenders out there. They're just kind of rare. So even that takes some time. It's just everyone wants it so fast. I guess it's a sign of our generation. Like, we just want our superstars to be there so quick. Like, even with LeBron... It's like, why doesn't he have a ring yet? And it's like, well, you know, give him some time. Like,
it's really just, hard to win a championship in the NBA.
It's extremely, extremely difficult. And, like, it's not like going back to LeBron, like, he wasn't knocking on the door. Like, he went to the finals. Like, he was in the Eastern Conference Finals quite a bit. Like,
right.
Just be patient. Like, give it some time. And I guess I think that's what should be the narrative that should take over with Blake Griffin. Like, give him, like, he has all the tools. He works hard. I mean, that guy, I remember when I was working for the Clippers, it was just a random summer day, and I went into the facility, and he's in there with about two other players, and I walk in the gym and just kind of sit down and watch, and he's mad at me because I'm watching because he knows that I'm going to report on it and give it, you know, publicity that he's working out during the summer.
Right.
The guy is just nonstop. He's nonstop, Zach. Like, he's just constantly in the gym. Like, he's going to get there. Just patience.
Yeah, that was the weird thing is that I really started to dislike, I still dislike his on-court persona because it seems like it takes away from his game, which his game is pretty awesome, I feel like, and you don't want stupid stuff like that to take away from it, but it's so noticeable. But so and there was the whole, like, Blake Griffin versus Kevin Love thing, like, while they're friends, you know, you immediately have to compare the two and it's an annoying thing, so you start nitpicking And then it got to the point last year where people were like, oh, well, Blake Griffin sucks. And I'm like, well, hold on a second.
Like, chill out, guys.
Like, maybe he is not living up to our expectations after his incredible rookie year, but he doesn't suck. He's quite skilled. He's a very good passer. He's a good ball handler. The jumper wasn't there. It looks like it's gotten much better this year. You know, free throw shooting's still bad. And they're like, well, all he does is dunk. Well, that's not true, and even if it was, if you can get 20 points a game by just being able to dunk, that's incredible.
Yeah, I've never understood that. Like, what's the problem with dunking?
Yeah.
It's the best shot in basketball.
He should be taking fadeaway 35-footers. That's when we know he'll be good.
Right, like, what do you want? Do you want him to be like Jamal Crawford, where he's just, like, punch drunk, like, falling off of 1 foot after, like, a triple crossover, taking a contested 21-footer that goes in 33% of the time? Like, is that what you want? Like,
now,
no, like, give me the efficient guy who just turns over his shoulder, scores every time. Like, it's so silly.
Now, this is going to get pretty awkward because there is absolutely zero Jamal Crawford slander allowed on this podcast.
Wait, we're not allowed to slander Jamal Crawford?
No, not on my podcast. No, this is...
That is the Chucker point guard in you, Zach, just coming out.
It is.
Just, just letting it expose itself.
This is 19-year-old Zach Harper wanting to be on the N1 mixtape tour. This is what comes through when we start talking about Jamal Crawford.
That's fair. I mean, I roll around all the time when I dribble, when I play basketball. It's the best move. It's arguably the best crossover move you can do.
Is he enjoyable for you? I love watching him, but he's also not on my team. So I guess when he's bad, it doesn't really affect me that much. But I've been a huge fan of his game for a long time, just because there is so much flair to it. And at times, it's overwhelming how good he is and how much he affects the game. But there are also times that the opposite is true, where it's how bad he is and he's affecting the game.
You know all those nice things you said about Chris Paul, like watching him every game and like being able to appreciate it? Well, Jamal Crawford is like the antithesis of that.
How dare you?
Where it's like you can enjoy him if you just pop in for the occasional like highlight or just watch, you know, a couple Clippers games a year. But watching him every game is going to kill me, I think. He just takes the worst shots, and when they're falling, I mean, it's great, but there's no filter, right? Where it's like, hey, I missed, you know, a couple of these off-balance fadeaways, like, let me back off that. Like, he doesn't possess that capability. He's fantastic to all, like, he's one of my top, like, highlight guys. Like, if I can just have, like, if I can go to Synergy and just, like, line up his field goals made, like, I'm going to have a great time. But right. If I have to line up the field goals attempted and watch that video clip, like, I'm going to be miserable.
Can you do me a favor and go to a game and talk to him pregame and say, look, there's this basketball nerd who really wants you to do a shake and bake on the court this season. You need to get this to happen. Because that's all. I just want one more.
You know, Jamal Crawford is probably the nicest human being alive.
I wrote something about him last season about how like he was struggling in Portland, and he needed to find himself of what he used to be, what used to make him so fun, and I threw like a bunch of clips in of his shake and bake moves, and he actually like read it and retweeted it, which I was surprised.
Yeah, he'll totally talk to you on Twitter, and like if he never turns down an interview, and it's just like,
see, don't you feel bad for slandering him now? He's such a great guy.
I feel awful, and it's like, I just, like, even though Rasul Butler is out of the league, like, I feel like I should focus all my slander towards him.
Oh, I don't want to say anything mean about you, so let's end this on...
Wait, you're a Rasul Butler guy?
No, oh god, no, no one likes Rasul Butler. It's just, it's the Jamal Crawford being compared to Rasul Butler in a very indirect way. No, that's how I'm I know that's what not what you said, but that's how I'm taking it.
Well, we better cut this off then.
Yeah, real quick, let's talk about DeAndre Jordan. You want him at the end of games. He's showing lately why he should play at the end of games. Talk about his progression.
Just confidence. I know that sounds stupid because it's not tangible, but you can see him get the ball in the post and he's like looking to score now. Whereas before, he would take his time and like freak out if someone dared double down on him on the block. But now he's got these little like pet moves. Like he's left-handed, but he's not really left-handed. And I asked him about this a couple years back. And he said that he thinks maybe he wasn't supposed to be left-handed, that he was supposed to be right-handed. So his favorite move, he's much more comfortable with his right hand, is this little right-handed jump hook. And, like, I don't know if it's because NBA players, like, don't watch tape, but they all figure he's going to turn, you know, to his left, and he gets them every time with that little spin back to the right. It's just, he's a player that just thrives on momentum plays. Like, if he can get a block or a big dunk, like, all of a sudden he's this monster. But if he doesn't get that, one of those things, like, he'll just kind of slog through the game a little bit. Like, I call him his cup of coffee plays. Like, he just needs a big play to get the crowd into it, and you've got, all of a sudden, this giant 7-foot center who can run the floor and who can jump out of the gym, you know, playing like he's Anderson Varejao hustles. You know what I mean? Like, he just needs those plays. But his development is coming along really, really well. It's pretty exciting to see just the little things that he's adding. Like, he's got a counter all of a sudden for his post move. And, like, this was unthinkable 2 years ago that, A, his teammates would give him the ball on the block, and B, that he would actually be able to do something with it. So it's incredible how far he's come already.
So he should be shooting free throws right-handed?
He should be. I didn't broach that topic. I probably could have, you know, helped his career quite a bit. I gotta reach out to him. I think he should be shooting free throws right-handed. He thinks he should be right-handed. Like, how funny is that?
That's incredible. DJ, thank you so much for joining us. Tell us where we can find you, everywhere we can find you.
I am at clipperblog.com. We just redid the site, so it's all fancy.
Yeah, look, the recaps look great now, by the way.
Schmazzy. Thank you, sir.
You're jambalaya.
I'm there at Pro Basketball Talk. Yeah, and on Twitter at Foster DJ, where I am consistently harping you about Kevin Love.
Yep, you have stolen him from my fantasy team, and I will never forgive you for that, just like I will never forgive you for the Jamal Crawford slander. So let's celebrate the Clippers backcourt together and find some common ground.
We're pretty much mortal enemies now, I think.
I feel like we are.
It's unfortunate, because I really do like you, but...
Yeah, no, it would have been great to be friends, but it clearly can't happen.
Yep, so just live.
All right, thanks, DJ.
All right, thanks.